talk freely about their lives. We'll also offer a CD of gems from our collection, clips from the 1969 first abortion speak-out, Loretta Ross on family planning in the black community, who is behind the doctored Planned Parenthood videos, the late great Roz Baxendall, and music of the movement. That's Thursday, November 5th, 9 to 11 p.m. because...
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?
And you're listening to radio station, WBAI New York. It's 7:01, maybe 7:02, depending on where you are. And that means it's time, once again, for Off the Hook.
Del vissuto degli uomini non è una scienza esatta, bensì un'esperienza legata alla contingenza e un processo che evolve ininterrottamente.
Yes, it's the two-hour version of Off the Hook here on WBAI. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Gigi D'Agostino, I think, for the whole 2 hours. I don't suppose anybody understood what he just said.
I don't think it would be appropriate to translate.
Maybe not, maybe not. Joined tonight, that was the voice of Mike over there.
Hi.
Kyle? Wait a minute, hold on, I forgot to turn your mic on. You gotta get, go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, four microphones here. And Rob T. Firefly.
Buongiorno.
And down in, well, somewhere, hang on, I gotta figure out which, why don't we mark the thing that with the phone to say phone? Which one is it?
This one?
That's
it.
I can tell because my voice gets all tinny.
I hear it.
Bernie.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Welcome, welcome. Now, I heard in the news today that runaway blimp got away. You hightailed it in your car on the interstate and managed to track it down using GPS and then got a high-powered shotgun and was able to bring the thing down in a field somewhere in Columbia County. Am I getting that right?
Not exactly. I was looking for it, Emmanuel. It kind of passed near Philadelphia. It was spotted northwest of Philadelphia, about an hour from me, and it was about a mile high, dragging a 6,000-foot steel cable. This is a military aerostat, like a blimp, only it's tethered. Something called JLINS, the Joint Land Attack Cruise Missile defense elevated netted sensor system. It's supposed to look for cruise missiles, basically. It's part of this big network, but this one escaped, and it was floating all the way up from, you saw it down in Maryland the other day, didn't you?
Yes. So you had no involvement in it coming. I wonder how I got that wrong. All right, so you didn't...
Had I had the opportunity, I would have gone for this thing. What I really would have liked to have done is grab onto that cable and hook a shortwave radio transmitter to that 6,000-foot long wire antenna and start broadcasting, because that signal would have gone global.
Yes, it would have. And yes, you're right. Kyle and I actually went down to Washington, D.C. last, was it Thursday?
Yes.
It's kind of cool because we went on the air last week, so we were able to sort of just stay up all night, and I guess we could have done that even if we were on the air. But we took a train down, and we arrived at 7 in the morning and walked right into the Hillary Clinton hearing. And afterwards, on the way back, you noticed it, Kyle. You noticed the blimp up in the air.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, and what did you say when you saw that blimp?
I said, look, it's a blimp. No, I knew exactly what it was. I knew it was some kind of, like, surveillance or military blimp. Because I think we reported about these. We talked about them in and out over the past, like, couple years maybe, and mm-hmm. it's come up. But to really see it in action, it was worth, I ran to the front of the train to try to see out the window, and I tried to take some pictures of it, but it looks like a white speck.
Well,
in
that's
the blue sky. It's
that's
terrible.
Kind of what it is. It is a white speck, but it was weird looking. We saw it right over Maryland.
Yeah.
They have two of these things, so this it's a 50% chance the one you saw was the one that tried to escape today. And I think that's kind of what we were seeing. We were seeing yet another member of the intelligence community trying to escape and leak some secrets, and it was heading towards Canada before. Well, I guess Bernie wasn't the one who got to it, but somebody got to it. Somebody brought it down over Pennsylvania, and its secrets will not be known, I suppose.
There's a big – it looks like a pregnant blimp. And actually, the technical name for these is an aerostat, which is a tethered blimp. And it had this big bulbous thing on the bottom that had a special radar on it. It didn't have a bunch of cameras on it like some surveillance platforms. But
Depends on what you consider a camera. I mean, it's a visualization.
Yeah. Bernie, I have an important question. You said this is an aerostat and not a blimp because it is tethered, but the whole point, the reason we're discussing it is that it became untethered, so does it then revert to being a blimp?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. I don't know. It could be called a free aerostat or a blimp. I don't know.
Well, okay, I'm very ignorant about this, but what the tether, is that the thing that the big cable, or does it have to be attached to the ground for it to be tethered?
Yes.
The big cable, it's supposed to be tied down, and because...
It had the big cable throughout. That was the problem. The big cable was hitting power lines, and about 25,000 people lost power as a result.
Yep.
I was hearing reports on the way in. This is great. We were using the TuneIn app and listening to this station called WILK in Wilkes-Barre. Is that how you pronounce it? Wilkes-Barre?
Yes.
Yeah, and it was great. We were listening...
980 kilohertz.
Okay, yeah, and 103.1 FM, if you want to be legal about it.
Yep.
And we were listening to them talking all about this big balloon that came down near them, and it was really kind of awesome because they knew about it landing, I think, about 20 minutes before CNN ever reported that it landed, so that was kind of interesting right there. And it's the magic of radio, especially with the Internet, where you can just tune in to where something is happening and listen to it live, listen to what's actually going on. But, yeah, the thing... had its I think 10,000-foot cable stringing along behind it, and it was uprooting trees and damaging cars. I'm surprised it didn't hurt people, and maybe it did. We might not know yet.
So trucks hit it on I think I-80, the highway. Some trucks, big trucks, hit the cable, and then it went over a high tension power line and shorted out the grid in that area, and like you said, like about 20,000 people are still out of power from this thing.
But we're all really amazed that this happened in the first place. I saw the bulletin come over, and I was like, wow, this is going to be an interesting story as this plays out, because how do you bring something like that down? I still don't know how exactly it came down, because supposedly they can stay up for 30 days with the helium they have.
Yep.
Well, you know, as American citizens, I think we should all be used to having power drained from us by large bags of wind from D.C., so I think it's all appropriate.
Just another day in the exciting lives that we all lead here in this day and age. We are here tonight, though, as part of another two-hour show, I think one of the concluding shows of the fundraiser, the WBAI fundraiser. And, excuse me, we are about to offer some interesting things. I want to thank people who called in 2 weeks ago when we did another two-hour show. Tonight we're offering something completely different. And I think maybe we should just sort of plunge into that to start with. What do you guys, unless you have some urgent business you'd like to put forward?
There's no more urgent business than keeping us on the air.
That's true. That is true.
I second that.
Well, if you agree with that and you want to keep us on the air, the way to do that is to call 212-209-2950 and pledge a huge amount of money, just without even thinking about it. That would start off on a good note. But if you want to know what we're offering tonight, we have a couple of items, both based on our amazing Hope conferences that we hold every 2 years. We have had over the course of a couple of decades now, some of the most amazing people speaking as keynotes at our conferences. And what we're offering tonight is your choice of either a DVD collection, and that's a bunch of DVDs, or a thumb drive collection of all of our keynote addresses. And those include the likes of Steve Wozniak, Richard Stallman, Aaron Magruder, Edward Snowden, William Binney. I know I'm leaving out people. Feel free to jump in.
I mean, I think it's really amazing that we can just say, you know, include someone like Edward Snowden in just this long list of people who are as amazing as he is. And, of course, his speech is in conversation with Daniel Ellsberg, another amazing person who, and I really enjoyed it. I think it was the first time the two of them had spoken publicly, which is something, you know, they chose Hope for that because we are the, you know, the kind of venue that mm-hmm. will really hear them out, and you can really hear them out and hear what they had to say to each other and to the audience if you pledge for these packages.
Yeah, and the amounts that we're asking for these two gifts are rather low, actually. $50 pledge. $50 pledge at 212-209-2950 will get you all the DVDs with all of the keynote addresses over the 10 conferences that we've had from 1994 to 2014. So you'll get everything. You'll get Jello Biafra. You'll get William Binney, Aaron Magruder, Edward Snowden, Daniel Ellsberg, Richard Stallman. Kevin Mitnick is in there. Just an incredible array of diversity and just enlightenment. And it's amazing to me because the Hope Conferences started as, well, it was a big conference when it started, the biggest of its kind in the United States, inspired by the Dutch conferences that had been taking place overseas. And it's grown. It's grown so much since then, not just in size, but in content. It's not just about hacking into computers and breaking security. It's about social issues as well. It's about all kinds of things that are in the news that we hear about every day. It's about leaks. It's about all kinds of other technological and non-technological things. And we had Jello Biafra speak, for instance. He had never even owned a computer at that point. Maybe he still hasn't. I don't know. And when we had Aaron Magruder speaking, people wondered, what does he have to do with computer hacking? And after he gave his talk, nobody asked that question anymore. So it's just an incredible way that the Hope Conferences have had over the years of reaching out and encompassing other communities as well. And that's what we've succeeded in, is expanding in that particular manner.
So have you said the amount to pledge yet?
I said 50 for the DVDs, 75 for the thumb drive. The thumb drive will get you video of all the keynote addresses as well. So it's your choice what media you want to receive it in. So,
I mean, that's just... you know, there are many programs on this radio station who you pledge $50 and they send you a DVD, and it's totally worth it because it's a great DVD. We're sending you over a dozen DVDs for your pledge of $50, and you're keeping us on the air for another few months where we'll say more things, some of which might by chance be, you know, just a small percentage as insightful as these talks. That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It shows the power that that you have as a listener as well, and how you're a part of this community in addition. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go back to 2006. And that was the year that Richard Stallman gave a keynote address at Hope Number 6. In fact, Kyle, you were in the room at the time. Do you remember this?
Yes.
I remember it, too. We didn't know each other at the time, but we were both in the same room. It was kind of cool. Richard Stallman was giving this keynote address.
He had a disc platter on his head.
He had a disc platter on. I don't remember that. Okay. It was on the 18th floor of the Hotel Pennsylvania, which is where the conferences take place. And there was this raging thunderstorm going on outside in the July afternoon. And there was lightning and thunder and Richard Stallman all together. I'm not sure how much of that came across in the video, because you'll note the first thing he does, well, apart from complaining about not having enough ice in his glass, he was complaining about the lights. So he made us dim the lights on him. So I'm not sure if that makes the lightning show up more. It might. So that could be a good thing right there.
Yes, this is Richard Stallman walking in with a disc platter on his head. He takes it off when he starts talking, but he did have a disc platter on his head.
All right, so let's go back to 2006.
A big one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when you think of disc platter, you probably think like a CD or a floppy disc, but it's like, I don't know,
yeah, from
20,
like
30 centimeters.
From like the, big? Yeah, yeah. The multi-user systems, you know, the big discs.
I don't know how to describe them any
we
better than that.
We
yeah.
can't do it justice. You're both failing miserably
yeah,
at describing this. The only way that you can appreciate what they are attempting to describe is to see it.
Yeah, it's beyond words.
And you can see it by pledging either $50 or $75, 212-209-2950, and getting all of the keynote addresses that we have had since 1994, from the very first conference with Robert Steele to the very last one with Edward Snowden and Daniel Ellsberg. So that's what we're offering, but we're going to go into a clip now from 2006 in a storm-ravaged New York. Richard Stallman.
Everyone, a man who needs no introduction.
Oh, it's warm, Pepsi.
Is it?
It seems to be. Is there any ice available?
We'll fix it.
Ladies
and gentlemen, RMS.
Why are you turning those lights on? It's too hot in here already. So turn them down, okay? You don't have to shine lights in my face to make me talk. Down, 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 down. Now, a little more light in the audience would be good so that I don't fall asleep. It's okay if you sleep. No, you won't make a bunch of people unhappy if you do. But I shouldn't sleep here. Anyway, we apologize for this delay due to late arrival of equipment, and we expect to get you moving shortly and wish you a pleasant listen on the way to the end of the speech or wherever your final destination may be. So I'm going to talk about free software and the hacker community. First of all, I better explain what free software means, since probably even a lot of you have not heard what it means. Free software means software that respects the user's freedom. There are four essential freedoms for the user of software, freedoms that every software user should always have. And these four freedoms make the definition of free software. Freedom zero is the freedom to run the program as you wish for any purpose. Freedom one is the freedom to study the source code and change it so that the program does what you wish. Freedom two is the freedom to help your neighbor. That's the freedom to make copies and distribute them to others, including publication. And freedom three is the freedom to contribute to your community, and that's the freedom to distribute your modified versions, including publication, when you wish. None of these is an obligation. You're never required to do any of these things, but the point is you're free to do them if you wish. And that means the software respects your freedom and respects the social solidarity of your community. If you use a program that doesn't give you freedom number two, you're in danger of falling into a moral dilemma at any moment when your friend says, "Could I have a copy of that program?" At that moment, you will be forced to choose between two evils. One evil is to give your friend a copy and violate the license of the program. The other evil is to deny your friend a copy and comply with the license of the program. Now, once you're in the dilemma, you should choose the lesser evil, which is to give your friend a copy and violate the license of the program. This is the lesser evil because it's directed at somebody who has done wrong. We can suppose that your friend is a good friend, a helpful person, and ordinarily would deserve your cooperation. Whereas the developer of a proprietary program has deliberately attacked the social solidarity of your community. Now, that's wrong. So if you can't help doing wrong to somebody, better it should be a wrongdoer that you do it to. However, to be the lesser evil does not mean it's good. It's never good to make an agreement and not keep it. Now, it may be less bad than keeping the agreement, depending on what you agreed to do. But it's never good. And an unauthorized copy of a non-free program shares most of the ethical ills of an authorized copy. The only one it doesn't share is that of rewarding the perpetrator. So what you should really do once you have understood this dilemma is make sure you're never in it. Don't set foot on the path that's going to lead you someday to that dilemma. And there are two ways to avoid it. One is don't have any friends. That's the method suggested by the proprietary software developers. And the other method is don't use proprietary software. That's the method I prefer. That way, I don't have to worry about a moral dilemma if someone asks for a copy of a program I've got on my computer, because I will only accept free software onto it. If someone offers me an attractive, convenient program on the condition that I promise not to share it with you, I will say no, because that's the right thing to do. And I would rather forego the convenience and fun of that program than put myself in a situation where I'd be ashamed of what I had done. Thank you. But just being free to share does not mean that you're in control of your own computer. For that, you need freedom number one. You need to be able to study the program and change it. That's what enables you to decide what your computer does. If you use a program that doesn't give you freedom number one, the freedom to study the source code and change it, then the developer controls what you can do. And you are under the developer's power. This is unjust. This is an unjust system of subjugation. If you don't have freedom number one, you can't even tell for certain what the program does. Lots of proprietary programs have malicious features. Because once the developer is in a position of power, the developer faces the temptation to go one step further and start using that power specifically to mistreat others. So they put in spy features and features designed to restrict the user, and even back doors. Now, spyware is quite common. One proprietary program that you might have heard of that spies on the user is called Windows XP. (Laughter) when the user of Windows XP, and I won't say you because I'm sure you wouldn't use a program like this, when the user of Windows XP searches her own files for a word, it sends a message saying what word was searched for. That's one spy feature. But there's another that we know of. When Windows XP asks for an upgrade, it sends Microsoft a list of all the software installed on the machine. Now, these spy features were not announced by Microsoft. People had to discover them through investigation, which was not always easy. There may be others which we don't know about. But spying is not limited to Windows. Windows Media Player also spies on the user. It reports everything the user looks at. Total surveillance. But please don't think that this is something that only Microsoft, the great Satan, would do. Because, in fact, RealPlayer was the first such program to do this kind of spying. Total surveillance, reporting everything the user looks at. And all Microsoft did was imitate them. Lots of companies spy on the user, and interestingly, the TiVo spies on the user in the same way, reporting everything the user looks at. Now, this is particularly interesting because the TiVo uses a lot of free software. It has a small GNU plus Linux operating system in it. And when it was first released, a lot of people in our community applauded it for using free software. But it also contains non-free software, and it has malicious features like spying on the user and digital restrictions management. And this shows that to use free software, which implicitly means to use some free software some of the time, is not a sufficient target. The target has to be to use only software that respects your freedom so that you have full freedom. Anything less is insufficient. And the TiVo is also an example of another malicious practice that I'll talk about later. But malicious features go beyond spying on the user. There's also the functionality of refusing to function, where the program says, I don't want to show you this file. I don't want to let you copy part of this file. I'm not going to print this file for you because I don't like you enough. This is DRM, Digital Restrictions Management, or digital handcuffs, where the program is designed specifically to restrict you for the sake of someone else. It becomes a simple instrument of someone else's power over you. And then there are back doors. There was a proprietary program called Interbase, which was liberated, and then the users could see that it contained a backdoor, and they could fix it. Presumably it had the same backdoor when it was proprietary, but the users couldn't see it or fix it. Another proprietary program that has a backdoor that you may have heard of is called Windows XP. You see, when Windows XP asks for an upgrade, Microsoft can identify the user, which means that they can deliver that user an upgrade designed specifically for him. They can take total control of that person's machine in any way they want, and that user has very little recourse. So, we know about this backdoor because we can deduce it from known facts, but there might be others. Microsoft was caught in 1999 having put a backdoor in a piece of server software for the NSA. And there might be backdoors introduced by others that Microsoft doesn't know about. For instance, some programmers in India working on the development of Windows XP were arrested and accused of working for Al-Qaeda, trying to introduce another backdoor that Microsoft wasn't supposed to know about. Well, apparently that attempt failed. Was there another attempt that succeeded? We can't tell. Now, there are various kinds of malicious features that proprietary software developers can put in. But not all of them do so. Some do and some don't. Of course, you can't necessarily tell which is which. So the result is that all proprietary software is just trust me software, where you surrender to a blind faith in a developer which you know might not deserve it. But what of the ones that don't put in malicious features? Well, they may be honest, but they're still human, so they make mistakes. And that means that their code has bugs. And the user of a program without freedom number one, the freedom to study and change the source code, is just as helpless confronting an unintended error in the code as she is confronting a deliberate misfeature. The user of a non-free program is a prisoner of his software. Now, we, the developers of free software, are also human, so our code has errors too. Every non-trivial program has bugs. The difference is that we respect your freedom. So when you find errors in our code, you can fix them. We can't make ourselves perfect. We can treat you decently.
Wow. We could listen to that all night. We have to stop at some place. But that was Richard Stallman giving the keynote address at Hope Number 6 back in 2006 here in New York City. And
it's always crazy to hear a mention of the NSA in some of these talks from way back.
Yeah.
It's really, there are some premonitions. There's some I think, I don't know, it feels good to hear that. It's encouraging. It makes you feel like some of the things people have been saying for a long time are being looked at in new light.
There's, guess what, guys?
New context.
We were on this decades ago, and reading early issues of 2600. People were talking about the NSA spying on Americans then. You know, it took a long time for the masses to catch up, for the media to actually report this. But, the hackers knew what was going on, and people like Richard Stallman certainly were sharing that information.
And I dare say, I think as much work as there is to be done, I mean, people are more aware of this kind of surveillance in general.
Mm-hmm.
The woman sitting next to me on the train, when I was talking about this this freed aerostat, she was the one that told me it was an aerostat.
Yeah, you were getting all excited about the blimp in the
sky. Didn't know what to call it.
And she knew what it was.
Totally familiar.
She was from Maryland, I think.
Local, yeah. So we now talk every day. You know, everyday discussion can cover surveillance dirigibles and the like.
Uh-huh.
So this is the kind of world we live in. It's no longer speculation or sort of the spook crowd so much that we get information from, and of course any that we dismiss. I mean, it's not something to dismiss. This stuff is real, and it's an everyday conversation.
And as that conversation continues in sort of the mainstream, as people are in general talking more about the NSA and starting to question its position in all our lives, it really strikes me that that's, you know, okay, we were talking about that at our conferences in 2006. We've been talking about it on this station for much longer than that. And that's the sort of thing that this station allows to happen. That's the sort of thing that would not happen on other stations, because there's nothing else like WBAI. And the only thing that's been keeping WBAI on the air for so many decades, generations even, has been you, the people listening to this. You are the ones we're answerable to, and you're the ones that are willing to put your money where your mouth is and say, yes, I believe this station should stay on the air. I think programs on this station should stay on the air. And the only way you can do that is by calling 212-209-2950 or by going to give2wbai.org.
Now, what we're offering tonight is a collection of all of our keynote addresses for all the Hope conferences. There have been 10 of them since 1994. We just heard an excerpt from Hope Number 6. And really, a vast array of different kinds of speakers, different subject material. And you get all of that on DVDs, each one a separate DVD, some multiple DVDs, for a pledge of $50, 212-209-2950. If you prefer a flash drive instead, where you can copy the files, no DRM on our files, you can copy them and then use the flash drive for anything else you wish to use it for, you'll get that for a pledge of $75, 212-209-2950. Bernie, I know you were in the room during the Richard Stallman talk. Any memories?
It was riveting. He was one of the volunteers. I found RMS to be one of our more challenging keynote speakers, but riveting conversation, riveting talks.
You're talking about the ice in the Pepsi glass. That was a challenge.
You know, he's just a challenging speaker. We'll say that he, you know, not only was he challenging to manage, he challenged you to think. And
yes.
That's why we treat all of our hope speakers. They challenge us to think, and that's what this radio station, WBAI, does, is it challenges you to think. It doesn't just cram commercial crap down your throat, into your ears, hoping that you will buy something. This is a radio station, unlike any other, that would air this kind of material. You're not going to hear this anywhere else. And I also want to thank 2600 Enterprises for donating these DVDs and flash drives, which are a tremendous value to our listeners. The radio station's a tremendous value, but this particular set of premiums is outstanding. I applaud you for putting this together, Emmanuel. So I want to encourage our listeners, if this is the kind of material you support hearing on this station or anywhere, call 212-209-2950. For a mere $50, you get at least a dozen DVDs with this kind of riveting material. Over $75, you can get a USB flash drive. You can just put it in your pocket and listen to it without an optical drive. But the most important thing is to support this station, which is the only station I know of that has the courage to air this kind of material. 212-209-2950.
I'd like to very quickly play one more excerpt from a different conference. This going back to the year 2000. I was just looking at h2k.net. You know, we still have the website up, and it looks like it hasn't been touched since around that time. I see there's a mention of h2k2 in 2002, so that might be the last time anyone ever touched that website. And it's cool because you see that we're planning it, and h2k just happened, and we just kind of moved on to the next website. We didn't change the page at all. We just changed the name and got a different site. So, I'm seeing about Jello Biafra giving the H2K keynote speech and how much of a milestone that was. That really was a milestone because at that point in the year 2000, we selected a keynote speaker that was not really known to the hacker world. It wasn't somebody who was a security expert or a hacker extraordinaire. It was somebody with interesting ideas that anybody who was open to them would find fascinating. And we find that most hackers are open to interesting ideas. Whether they agree with them or not, they are always interested in hearing it and debating it and learning more and spreading information. So with that in mind, we asked Jello to give the talk at H2K in 2000. And from that point, I think the tone of Hope Conferences changed to include not only talks about computer hacking and security and various other things like that, but also social issues and a much bigger world. And in so doing, we also brought more people into the community. And I think that was a real turning point.
I think so. I think with people like Jello Biafra, with like Aaron Magruder, who created the comic strip Boondocks and later the TV show, all these interesting people we get in who aren't necessarily what you would call computer hackers themselves. Some of them didn't even have a computer at the time, but they approach things. They approach their own fields and subjects of expertise with a hacker spirit, something that's very much in the hacker spirit. Jello Biafra coming from the punk world, Aaron Magruder coming from the art world, people like the Yes Men, just all these different individuals who are willing to still challenge us to think, as Bernie said. They really do, and I think they add a whole lot to the conference. And you can get that whole package by calling 212-209-2950 or going to give2wbai.org and showing your support for us.
Okay, this excerpt is only a couple of minutes, and it's from Jello Biafra back in the year 2000 at the H2K conference.
Oh, who are some of the other ones? News Corporation, owned by that noted progressive humanitarian Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox, their agenda certainly isn't to tell it like it is, let alone put interesting stuff on the air. You know, part of the way you get people to shut up and shop is to dumb down the news to help dumb down the people. Even in the late 80s, there were surveys pointing out, like from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, who everybody here should support and get to know, among others, that even then there had been already been a 25% reduction in actual news on the news program. And now what you get is, good evening, here's the news. 20 minutes of O.J. Simpson, Monica Lewinsky, JonBenet Ramsey, or Princess Diana, or whatever. Then a quick shot to the instant cam. Well, yeah, there was some weird-ass car wreck here about 4 hours ago, but the street does seem to be empty now. Now back to you. Well, now word from our sponsor, then weather, then sports. And that, you know, it's basic, and that's all the news you need to know. Dumbing down the people and deliberately keeping them that uninformed is rather anti-democratic, if you ask me, because people can't make informed decisions if they don't know what the hell's going on. And, I mean, it's basically a way of just keeping people asleep, so it's better, because it's, after all, for the corporate world order, it's better that we function as livestock instead of active and proactive thinkers. It's like in the old Soviet evil empire and communist China, the way you control the masses and make them livestock through advertising is basically fear of not keeping up with the state. We're here and you know, give them as little information as possible. Here, we bombard people with so much information they don't necessarily know where to begin to sift through it all, and it's fear of not keeping up with the Joneses instead. And so it's sort of a modern lobotomy through fear, if you will. It's like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? I'm not making $1 million as a dot-com executive.
And that was Jello Biafra from 2000, from our H2K conference, part of the package we're offering tonight as part of the WBAI fundraiser. You will get that keynote address. You will get all the keynote addresses from every HOPE conference that has ever taken place here in New York City. For a pledge of $50, you'll get DVDs. For a pledge of $75, you'll get a flash drive. And it's riveting. And you also get video, which you don't get on the radio. And I should point out, that sound was degraded because we pulled that from an online source. You'll get a much better sounding audio from that as well, in addition to the video. 212-209-2950 is the phone number to call to support Off the Hook, to support WBAI, to support the HOPE conferences and freedom of speech. And as you can see, when Jello was giving that talk, he opened up a lot of eyes. A lot of people were riveted who had never heard of him before. And he actually had so much fun that he came back to several HOPE conferences afterwards and gave more talks. And he almost became a tradition for every HOPE conference afterwards. We haven't had him in the last few, but maybe we'll have him again.
It really added a lot. I remember watching that keynote, and it was an excellent talk. It really covered a whole lot of ground. And I remember after the conference, samples of the talk started coming out. It found its way back into the music world, and a couple of musicians had sampled clips of his talk in their work. I remember there was a Chumbawamba remix. There were some other things. But yeah, it was really interesting stuff, and it, as you said, it added a whole lot to what HOPE was in general, I think.
Yes, Bernie, any recollections of this one?
I do. Actually, I ran into Jello arrived at the hotel that year, I think, around 2, 3 in the morning. I happened to be in the Hotel Pennsylvania lobby, and I saw him wandering around. I was like, yeah, Jello. So we had to find a hotel room for him, and I think I woke you up on your cell phone. You were not too happy, understandably. But we got him situated, and he gave a fantastic talk the next day. As Rob said, it opened a lot of eyes. He's just like, this guy's not from the hacker community. But, you know, he is. He hacks media. And he did it when he was with the Dead Kennedys, and he's still doing it today. And you can pick up a copy of this amazing keynote speech by Jello Biafra with 10 other riveting keynote speakers from the HOPE series of conferences by calling 212-209-2950. $50, you can get them all on DVD. $75, you can get them on a convenient USB flash drive. This is with video and high-quality audio. But most importantly, you're supporting the station, WBAI, that allows us to play this kind of material for your mind, so you can really think about things that you're not going to hear on any other radio station, TV station, or other media source. So please call 212-209-2950. This is a great value, but the biggest value is this radio station, 212-209-2950.
And you mentioned that there were 10 others, actually more than 10 others, because there were some conferences where we had more than one keynote speaker. So we're including all of those as well. And I believe we're also adding some additional favorite talks of our own. So you're going to get a bunch. You're going to get a bunch of talks, more than a dozen, certainly. And I don't think anything is more worth it than that.
We're getting a message from our remote producer that some people are calling and the people who answer the phone are a little bit confused. So what you do is you call 212-209-2950 and you ask for the Hope Archives thumb drive, if that's what you want to pledge for. That's a pledge of $75. Or the Hope Archives DVD collection, that's a pledge of $50. Use those magic words and you should be able to get what you want and help keep us on the air. Or use some other magic words and just keep us on the air.
Or you can go to give2wbai.org and use your own words and hopefully find it that way. But you should be able to just keep trying. If for some reason you wind up with a confused person, hang up and call back and you'll get someone less confused. That's how I deal with the phone company, so it probably works here as well. 212-209-2950 is our telephone number. Hey, let's look at some news items in the interim before we go to our next clip. Again, we're on for 2 hours tonight with a special expanded edition. I'd like to focus on Hackers in Trouble, because that's sort of a regular feature here. And this is the case, this comes from the Daily Star over in the UK, of Charlton Float. Do you hear about this case? The whole big expose on this kid. He was just 16 years old when he hacked the British and U.S. government sites, crashing them in January 2013. Now, keep in mind, I'm reading this from the Daily Star, so there are going to be some funny words in there, such as the British and U.S. government sites. He didn't crash them all, I don't think, but it makes it sound like he did. He said he wanted to be famous when asked why he had done it. A court heard the intelligent, that's in quotes, team and other hackers bombarded the websites with huge quantities of digital traffic, causing the Home Office site to crash for 83 minutes. Wow. The FBI site, which was the holy grail for hackers, you all knew that, of course, right? It was down.
I regularly drink wine from the FBI website.
Well, you said it. It was down for almost 5 hours a few days earlier, meaning people were unable to report crimes.
What?
That's what it says. That's what it says.
Can you report crimes on the FBI
well, apparently,
website?
Apparently you can. But this guy was making it impossible for people to do that. I love reading stories like this. A cocky Float, that's how they refer to him, this cocky kid named Float, was caught after he bragged about the attacks on a hacker's internet forum, we've all been there, and on Twitter, where he said the FBI site had been down for nearly 5 hours. Well, I don't know why we needed him to say it if it was down for 5 hours, but whatever. Police then linked him to the hacks when he used his own IP address to check how effective the attacks had been.
Boo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was 16 then. He didn't know anybody. He's 17 now, and probably...
Well, maybe,
actually, I don't know how old
he is. Maybe
you
should take some lessons from some 14-year-olds.
This is how we learn. Okay, after he was nicked, officers... Again, a British term. Officers also found Float had downloaded... Oh, boy, here we go. 111 prohibited images of children. On March 31st, April 7th, and June 2nd of last year, when he was aged 17 and 18. Not at the same time. Okay, there was some kind of progression there. Here's the part that's really kind of weird. The pictures were in cartoon form and had the common theme of mature mothers engaging in sexual acts with their sons who were as young as 9 or 10. Cartoons? Cartoons are prohibited images now?
Oh, yeah, obscenity's pretty nasty.
Yeah, but prohibited. Illegal. cartoon.
Yeah, really? Depiction. Yeah.
I mean, Prophet Muhammad was one thing, but this, really?
This is a whole show. We need like a whole 4-hour show to unpack this.
But this is the UK. It's not the case here, right? If you draw a stick figure and say that's, you know. I don't want to give people
depends
ideas
on who's asking.
But come on, it's we're getting a little crazy here.
It's true, it's a little crazy, but yeah, I mean, depends on who you're asking in this country and and what you're asking about, but anyway, there's a lot to it, but that doesn't surprise me.
Well, anyway, this guy was spared jail, sentenced to 8 months in prison, suspended for 18 months. I don't understand how that works. I was bad at math. Sentenced to 8 months in prison, suspended for 18 months. So that means...
Yeah, if you don't do anything else for 18 months, then you don't have the 8-month prison sentence.
I thought he got like 10 free months somewhere. Okay. So he stayed out of trouble for 18 months with a supervision order.
I mean, I assume that's what it means. I don't know the British legal system.
Sentencing recorder, John Steele, sounds serious. He said, these actions were wrong, serious, and criminal. You must have known this from the outset. They are absolutely nothing to be proud of. The defendant was, at the time of offenses, 16 years old, partially driven by fascination with computer hacking. He was craving for recognition by fellow hackers and driven by a sense of youthful bravado.
This was written by native speakers of English?
To a like-minded community, boasting to others in the hackers community about his prowess and achievements. The consultant forensic psychiatrist found insufficient evidence that you suffer from an autism spectrum disorder. And it goes on from there. Basically, he was read the Riot Act and promised never to do anything bad again. But, you know, I think it's good that he didn't go to jail. It would be nice if that was the default, where people who get into this kind of trouble didn't wind up going to jail.
It'd be nice if hacker bravado did not include bragging about that kind of crap.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it'd be nice if adulation and acknowledgement from your friends didn't require that. I mean, I think he's in a, you know, but also at an age where you kind of have to expect there's a little of that going on.
Well, these are social issues that, yeah, we have to deal with, absolutely, but... I think the bigger issue is keeping kids out of jail and keeping kids from having criminal records that will follow them around for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And not charging people with crimes for ridiculous things like cartoons and things like that.
Yeah, and I'm willing to wager that if not all, then most people maybe in this room as well as listening to us maybe did something irresponsible when they were a teenage kid.
Maybe.
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 Possibly.
Absolutely not.
But I
waited until I was an adult.
Yeah,
good job. But yeah, if everything that a stupid kid did that was stupid, that was maybe not a good decision, ended up in a huge sort of write-up like this, where they're taking gleefully every opportunity to say everything possible, possibly negative about this kid. Oh, look, he also had cartoons that might scare you. He also, you know, yelled at his mother and crossed the street without looking both ways, and all this stuff. It really tells a lot about not only this media outlet, but also the attitude in general when it comes to the press and look at this hacker. Oh my God, this is a scary person. Look at all this other stuff they're doing.
So. Well, and justice in general.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
exactly.
This is in particular hacking and stuff, but I mean, you should have a chance to say your side of the story and present yourself in the best of light, as you'd like to explain. You know, get your day in court, as it were. But to a certain degree, the media and so on is free to do what they will and characterize people in the ways they will, and without actually looking at some of these crazy, crazy laws and ways of interpreting them in some instances. But.
Yeah, I'm actually having a little bit of a hard time getting worked up about this compared to some of the stuff that would happen in the States in an equivalent situation. Like, look, it's not nice to take down other people's websites. And if you take down a powerful person's website, you're more likely to get into trouble.
It's not nice.
But,
you're right. It's not nice.
But, you know, at least he's not, like, suffering decades in jail. And, like, I hate that I'm rationalizing it in this way, but compared to the States, this sounds great.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there are bad things that happen over in the UK as well.
Oh, of course.
As far as sentencing people for ridiculous crimes. And there are cases in the States where people don't get sentenced to prison for being mischievous or even stupid. You have to look at what we're really talking about here. What we're really talking about is the FBI website going down for 5 hours. Okay, you know, pain in the ass, but I think the blimp escaping is more of a pain in the ass for the government, and nobody's going to prison for that. It's just this is education. This is how we learn how to design better websites and how we learn what the weak points are. If our own teenagers are defeating the security of our infrastructure, imagine what true enemies of the state would do. So consider it a learning experience, and maybe communicate with these kids a little better, and you won't have criminals in prison for decades that wind up hating you.
Yeah, they're finding out what is cool and what is acceptable and appropriate behavior, and yeah, there should be some allowance for that. There should be measured responses. And I think that's been kind of a theme in the last couple of months, is the kinds of responses we get, all the way from corporate letters to people suggesting things to specific incidents like this, and on and on.
Absolutely. Bernie, any thoughts?
Yeah, it just reminds me of other crazy cases we heard about in the UK. This one doesn't really work me up either, like Mike, but we had the mom of Richard O'Dwyer on this show 3 or 4 years ago, who set up a website called TV Shack. And he was just providing links to other websites where you could download TV shows that other people had recorded and put on other servers. And, you know, that guy really was looking at some serious time. He was extradited to the United States. It was really crazy stuff. But, you know, like you said, these are young people who have discovered vulnerabilities and done frankly a public service to these companies who have really, if they really want to protect their property, should or protect their intellectual property or what they would even claim is their intellectual property, protect it better. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff we talk about on this show that I don't know many other radio stations would play this kind of material because, you know, commercial media has an interest in intellectual property and protecting it and whatever, but we sort of have a different viewpoint of it, as certainly RMS, who we played earlier tonight, has a very different viewpoint about this sort of thing. So if you like hearing this kind of material, I'd encourage listeners to support this station and get a lot of this content shipped to you by calling 212-209-2950. You can get a DVD set with more than a dozen Hope keynote speeches, or a USB flash drive with the same material on it for $75. But the main thing is to support this station by calling 212-209-2950. You will have many, many hours of really riveting stuff to listen to, and you'll keep the station on the air so you can listen to many more.
I echo what you said about saying things that and playing things, talking about things that are not popular. I mean, think about the last thing Jello said was basically that you have peer pressure to make your $1 million in the dot-com startup arena. And I think that's so funny, and it's apropos. It's now, I mean, gosh, that seems like such a little amount of money in that world. And today I think it's overcrowded to the extent that it's not even what you would aspire to. You just want to go work for one of those companies. The people coming up now aren't even thinking that way. I don't think the pressure's there. They just want to, like, find one of those places that maybe will pay them, or and on and on and on. Or maybe they, you know, want to create something that's even more massive and costly. And to what end? It basically is another behemoth of a tech company that does nothing and either spies or, you know, ruins tech for people. I mean, whatever it does, it does. And, you know, these are ideas that you wouldn't normally hear. I mean, people talk about tech in passing so easily. We aren't as critical. We're not conditioned to be critical of the structure of some of these industries and the kind of mediated world that we are navigating with all of these new tools and stuff. We have the promise of such easy information and ease of so many things, but the ramifications, the implications, the sheer greed at play behind it, and the impact that greed is having, that stuff matters, and you're not going to hear that on like your commercial stations, the kind of evening news that Jell-O was talking about. That's not popular. And even in the tech world, I think we would have a hard time because we wouldn't be talking venture capital numbers. We wouldn't be talking about which business we started this week and how our serial entrepreneurship is going and our portfolio this and that and the other thing. You know, we wouldn't do well in those circles either. That's what this is about. This is community broadcast. We can talk about whatever we want here. And we're here opening these things up. We're here to learn, too. We're by all means not experts. I've been meaning to say this for years. In case you haven't checked, like, we're not experts. We are here to learn. We're here to analyze this stuff. We go over it. We're familiar, and we are absolutely passionate and interested in this area. But we depend as much on listeners and the community around us, this special community here, the radio station and beyond, to support us and to challenge us, maybe provide us with corrections. You could do that. Hey, OTH@2600.com. That's where you write. You write a letter. You can write us an email. We'll play a file if it's clean. We'll play something if you observe something you recorded. Or we've done all kinds of things like that in the past, and we really do benefit from this community. So I just want to get that out, that this really does matter. This is important stuff, and what Bernie's talking about is no joke. It's a special thing to have this transmitter and this station going the way it is. And, gosh, we've got a lot to hope for in the future.
Absolutely. Well said, Kyle. And you are listening to WBAI New York. It's just after 8 o'clock. Personal Computer Show is not on tonight, unfortunately. Well, the fortunate part is that we're on. We're on for another hour, and we're going to bring you a few more excerpts of talks from the Hope Conference. Kyle, you got something else?
Should I get off the table now?
Yeah, you can sit back down.
Okay.
Absolutely, thank you. We are going to go now to the year of 2012. That's when Hope Number 9 took place. Now, this is particularly interesting, and as we've been saying, we're offering a special a collection tonight of all of our keynote addresses that have taken place at Hope Conferences throughout the years. For a pledge of $50, you'll get a bunch of DVDs. For a pledge of $75, you'll get a thumb drive with all of the DVD quality files on them that you can copy and spread around to your heart's content. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. And, Mike, the secret words to say to the people to not confuse them, what were they again?
It is the Hope Archive. Sorry, I lost my email.
We're all confused here.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
It's the Hope Archives thumb drive or the Hope Archives DVD collection.
Yeah.
212-209-2950.
If you say the Hope Archives, that should pretty much trigger.
You think so?
Yeah, I hope so. 212-209-2950, that's our phone number. Now, what we're going to do is go to some excerpts, a couple of excerpts, actually, from William Binney's talk. Now, William Binney was an NSA analyst who turned into an NSA whistleblower. Keep in mind, this was before Edward Snowden appeared on the scene. And it was particularly interesting because Laura Poitras was there. Remember
she
this,
was.
Kyle?
Yeah,
we met Binney at the train station, at Penn Station, and we all escorted him up to the hotel before his talk. And the things he was saying, they seemed unbelievable at the time. He was talking about the NSA spying domestically on Americans, and the numbers he was giving out just seemed so incredible, the amount of data. And I remember the mass media just basically brushing this off, not taking it seriously, even though this guy had been raided and harassed by the authorities himself for daring to release this information and to actually share with people that had every right to know what the NSA was really up to. And it wasn't until Edward Snowden came on the scene a year or so later that people really started to wake up. But this is a good example of how the speakers at Hope Conferences were ahead of the game and are courageous, too. A lot of them have such guts to come out and speak out against what are really, really powerful adversaries. That's something that William Binney will forever have my respect for, because it took a lot of guts to do what he did. And so many people don't even know his name, and I think that needs to change. You'll get his whole talk, 212-209-2950, pledge for the Hope Archive premiums. Let's take a listen to William Binney from 2012 in New York City. most certainly was in the NSA buildings that we saw just a moment ago. Well, after 9/11, he noticed a change in what the NSA was doing. He saw that the technology was being used against Americans in our own country, and that was too much for him to deal with. And he became, instead of an NSA analyst, he became an NSA whistleblower. And I think there's nothing more courageous than standing up to such a powerful entity and letting the rest of us know what's really going on. And with that, it's my honor to introduce as our keynote this Friday, William Binney.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the coordinators of HOPE for inviting me here to give me the opportunity to express my story. Some of it was hard to believe. I'm sure you'll find some of it difficult to believe. I find some of it difficult myself to even believe that actually things like this happened and our government did these kinds of things. But so what I'd like to do is go through my entire background with NSA and how I handled the events in 9/11 after that, and all the things that happened with the Department of Justice and us after that. Plus, then I'd like to go into some of the technology that is involved in large database analysis with you, and then give you my impression of what the White House's new initiative on big data analysis is really all about, even though they can't say it correctly. This is really what they're asking, and I'll try to define that for you, and hopefully that'll give you some idea. It'll certainly give you a better idea, I believe, how these events occurring and how dangerous metadata is to monitoring the entire population. As I've said before in different forums, the KGB, the Stasi, and the Gestapo could never have dreamt of having anything as great or as comprehensive as this capacity to monitor the population. Their primary focus, they tried to get information about their population so they could control it, and that's fundamentally what dictatorships and totalitarian systems do around the world. And that, unfortunately, is the way our government is going. And so I'll try to define what that's all about, the technology behind that, and what they're asking now and in the future. And they're spending hundreds of millions to do that a year here. Yeah, well, here's how this solution worked. You know, it was actually penciled out. It wasn't done in the computer. You know, the point is that miracles don't happen in the computer. They happen in your mind, and you relate them on paper. And you could see them on paper, and then you build the programs to manage them. So, I mean, computers can do a certain amount, but fundamentally the trick is to get the get your mind wrapped around the problem to where you can understand it, to the point where you can see into it and begin to break it apart and solve it. So, at any rate, 9/11 happened, and so I started thinking, maybe I should reconsider retiring because I always wanted to do something positive, like stop the bad guys, even though there was all this corruption around me, you know. But it must have been right after, a few days, no more than a week after 9/11, that they had decided to begin actively spying on everyone in this country. And they were doing it by taking billing data from telecoms. But what I didn't know at the time was in February of 2001, they had already started requesting that data from different telecoms. This is when the CEO of Quest refused them, and he went into court and testified to that, and that he was approached by some three-star general out of NSA to provide customer data. But that was in February of 2001. Well, the point was that we had put our system together all from end to end and had it functioning in November of 2000. So this is 3 months after that. Which meant that they wanted that back part of our program to run all the spying. All right? So that's exactly what they did. So then they started taking the telecom data, and it expanded after that. So, I mean, the one I knew was AT&T, and that one provided 320 million records every day. that was just phone calls. And then when they got the taps in, like the ones in San Francisco, they started the NARUS devices to take the data off the internet. So what I did after that was, I was naive enough to think that the government would really, if people in certain positions of the government knew this was going on, that they would take some action to correct it, or at least bring it back into some constitutional form of, or some process that was constitutionally acceptable. You know, so I went to the House, Senate, the House Intelligence Committee, the HPSI, and the staff member that I personally knew there, and she then went to Porter Goss, who was the chairman of that committee, and also Nancy Pelosi, who was the deputy or the minority rep. They were all briefed into the program at the time, by the way, and all the other programs that were going on, including all these CIA programs. Porter Goss referred her to General Hayden out at NSA. Well, I mean, you know, it's going back to the origin of this program. So, and he went out there, and of course, she talked to him, and he said, of course, we don't have to worry about that now. It's all been approved by the White House, and it's legal. So spying on everybody then was legal internally. It was all written up in memos by you and I guess others. Held in. In fact, I know the NSA lawyer went down to Addington's office in Cheney's, who was right outside of Cheney's office. Addington was his legal rep there, and he asked for the memos that said that the spying was legal, so he'd have a written record documentation, so that his ass wasn't on the line, you know. And he never got it, of course. Because if he got anything like that, and I don't think anything like that was written, because that would be direct evidence for impeachment. So they didn't do that. So, and they didn't get the record, so they kept going, and that program was reauthorized every 45 days by the what I call the Yes Committee, which was Hayden and Tenet and the DOJ. So. Shortly after that, I mean, I went from there. I wasn't alone in this, by the way. There were four others out of NSA and one staff from the HPSI, one member of the staff. We were all trying to work internally in the government over these years, trying to get them to come around to being constitutionally acceptable and take it into the courts and have the courts oversight of it too. So we naively kept thinking that could happen. And it never did. In fact, even now they're trying to keep all these issues out of the court. That's why I signed the affidavit for EFF to help testify. I wanted to testify in court about all this stuff. Because, in my mind, these people are still hiding behind this, quote, national security curtain. And all I want to do is move that aside and say, "See, don't pay attention to that man behind the curtain, because he's affecting you. He's affecting every one of us." I mean, in my mind, we're going down this slippery slope towards totalitarianism, and that's why I told Jim Bamford that I thought we were about that far from a totalitarian state. At least everything is set to make that turn that key. And have that happen. Thank you.
And we've been listening to William Binney from Hope Number 9 giving the keynote address. Just part of our special keynote package that we've been offering tonight on Off the Hook. William Binney, ex-NSA. What a talk that was. You guys remember this?
It was a heck of a talk to listen to.
Yeah, really. It was inspirational and made you angry at the same time. Bernie, I know you were there for that as well.
I was, and I have to say that was some of the most terrifying and scary talk I have ever heard in my life, not just at a Hope conference. It frightened the hell out of me that our government, I mean, it shouldn't be surprising to any of us what he was saying, but to hear someone who was there that actively tried to get our government to follow the Constitution, and the part we didn't hear was he was arrested by gunpoint in his shower in his own home, and basically charged with espionage for trying to they wanted to lock him up for the rest of his life for talking about this stuff. There's a backstory, Emmanuel. I think you've probably heard this too, that Laura Poitras, who was at that talk at Hope, filmed Binney and used some of the footage from this talk you just heard in her op-doc produced along with the New York Times back in 2012. And the word is that Edward Snowden saw that documentary while he was working for an NSA contractor. And I think he's actually spoken or at least touched on this. And this is the talk that inspired Edward Snowden to realize that going through official channels to report illegality by our own government on a massive scale even was not the way to go. Because the government will just arrest you at gunpoint, lock you up for the rest of your life, or try to. And that's why Edward Snowden decided to leave the country and go public from a safe place. Had he done what William Binney did, is try to work within the system, we wouldn't be hearing much from Edward Snowden right now.
Interesting. Well, so you're saying that what Binney was saying was a direct inspiration to Snowden.
I have heard this from more than one source that that op-doc that Edward Snowden saw called The Program, produced by with the New York Times and Laura Poitras, excerpts of this Hope Talk were in that documentary. I've seen the documentary. You can just search online for The Program and Laura Poitras, P-O-I-T-R-A-S. You'll see part of this Hope Talk in that documentary. And Edward Snowden is reported to have seen that and it been inspired to realize that going through official channels to report gross illegality and unconstitutionality by our own government was futile. And I think we all know that had Edward Snowden tried to go through official channels like Bill Binney would did, we would not have learned huge amounts of information we'd learned from his leaks. This information never would have gotten out. The huge troves of information we've learned from Edward Snowden would have never reached public ears and eyes had Edward Snowden gone through official channels at NSA. So that's why he did what he did. But this talk we've just heard is a key part of the puzzle of how all this stuff works. And I encourage, if you want a real scare, you know, I've seen scary movies before. You watch this DVD, you will be frightened to death. I think it's really scary. 212-209-2950, you'll get this talk. You'll get like a dozen more, either on a DVD set or on a flash drive, $50 and $75 respectively. And you'll be supporting a radio station that makes this available to the public. There aren't any other radio stations that are going to air this material. So please support this station, what we're trying to do here, by calling 212-209-2950 and ask, what is it exactly, the name of the premiums we need to ask for?
Okay, well, we have a couple of updates, so we really need to give people here, because I know a number of people have been calling in trying to pledge for these things. It's really frustrating when the government tries to prevent you from getting word out. It's exceptionally frustrating when incompetence prevents you from actually doing it when you've surpassed that particular challenge. We have had the premiums registered here at the station, but they were hidden, and nobody could pledge for them for the past hour and 20 minutes. And since we're kind of isolated here in a radio station with no phones, we had no way of knowing what was going on until we did a little bit of investigation ourselves while we were doing the show. So we're sorry about that. Not our fault. We had the things registered, but somehow they were registered wrong. And if you were calling in and trying to pledge for these things, you were probably told that you couldn't do it. And I'm sorry about that. They are now visible. If you search for Hope at givetowbai.org, go to the third page, you'll see them at the bottom there. And if you call 212-209-2950, and please, I hope all the people who have been calling for the last 80 minutes call back, 212-209-2950. The people there now will know what you're talking about, because whoever hid the premiums has now unhidden them.
And I'd like to give a special shout-out and thanks to the multiple listeners who emailed us and tweeted at us about this problem.
Sometimes this place, just, you know, it's I can't use the words I want to use. But, yeah, I hope our listeners are still with us, and we'll call in droves now to make up for all the time that this mistake has cost us. And I hope you've enjoyed what we've played so far, because it's pretty inspiring stuff, and I know a lot of people want this package. 212-209-2950. I fear the pledge people will be overwhelmed by all the calls that come in, hopefully.
Good. I think that's the way to go. And if you go to give2wbai.org and search for Hope Archives, they'll be at least on the first page of results. And if you call 212-209-2950 and say, I would like the Hope Archives DVD collection or the Hope Archives thumb drive, they will be able to find it too.
And
so
those of you
exciting in
charge of things here, when you see that we raised a big fat goose egg for the first hour of the show, hopefully that won't be something that is judged on us, and we wind up at 4 o'clock in the morning in a graveyard shift because we don't have any listeners. We have plenty of people out there that support us and want this package and have been trying to get it for a while now. 212-209-2950. We apologize to our listeners for this oversight, whatever caused it.
And for those of you listening to us in the mysterious future because you were unable to listen live and you checked out the podcast or the archive copy, this for as long as these last, they will still be listed on the site and you should be able to get them. Give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950.
Limited quantities available, but if you call or visit the website, and you should do it now before they run out, but if you still see them there or they can still find them, they're still available.
Yeah, well, they're all there now because none of them have been touched.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, well, right, if you're listening live, then you definitely don't have this problem.
Again, 212-209-2950, you'll get all the DVDs for $50. You'll get a big fat thumb drive for $75, all the keynote addresses for all the Hope conferences.
So even though it's not our fault, I think as an apology to our listeners for this trouble, if you pledge for the thumb drive, we will throw in a few extra talks.
Well, we're going to do that anyway.
Well,
but yeah, okay, now we're doing it because of that. That's what we'll say. That's how it
works. I'm trying to be nice to the people.
Well,
our most supportive listeners.
We already said we were throwing in extra ones, though.
Oh, I was out of the room when we said
all
that.
All right. But, yeah, we'll make it up somehow. We'll try. We'll work extra hard.
Yeah, like we'll have another Hope conference this next summer.
All right, I guess we'll do that then.
Yeah.
212-209-2950. The problem is we're so cut off here. We can't see calls coming in anymore. We can't talk to our listeners on the phone. And things like this happen. And thanks to the listeners who were... how did we hear from them? If we don't
a couple of people emailed us. Someone I know direct messaged me on Twitter about it.
You shouldn't be checking your phone during the show. We've discussed this. And
fortunately,
well, you're assuming I checked it on my phone.
We have a remote producer reading the emails who notified us.
All right. That's the kind of thing that can happen with live radio. You won't hear this on NPR, that's for damn sure. 212-209-2950.
There's something else we haven't mentioned. If, by any chance, these premiums are not of particular interest to you, there are other things you can do to support the station. There are other premiums you can get if you go online to give2wbai.org. There's a link called Favorite Show eDonation. You can donate to your favorite show, and WBAI has some special things for you, apart from the premiums we offer. But just mention that you're donating in the name of Off the Hook, because that's our favorite show. We hope it's one of yours. Also, you can if you don't want to donate $50, you can donate lesser amounts, and we will still appreciate it. A lot of people donating a little bit is just as good as one person donating a huge pile. And so you can be of help. You can still become part of what happens at the station. You can get a BAI membership. You can become a BAI buddy and have regular donations automatically billed to you subscription style, and take a hands-off approach to how you support us, but you will still be supporting us. 212-209-2950 or give to WBAI.org.
On the other hand, if you are able to contribute more, you know, maybe your company just got bought out by Google and you have $1,000 sitting around to send to us, we would love that too.
Yeah, isn't the end of the fiscal year approaching?
I don't know what
I
that
think
means.
I think that happens in September or something. I don't know. I don't understand it either. 212-209-2950. Help us keep going here at WBAI on Off the Hook. Hey, I'd like to go to another excerpt just so I can maybe stick my head out the window and scream a little bit. This is from the year 2002. That was the year we had Aaron Magruder show up. And again, people were asking, this was after we had Jell-O, the previous conference, people were asking, what does he have to do with the hacker community? I'll tell you what Aaron Magruder had to do with the hacker community. He was the guy that actually got the whole DECSS controversy right in Boondocks. He portrayed it in every single newspaper in the country, which carried Boondocks, a large number did. And
print newspaper. Right? This was back when print newspapers were a thing.
Well, yeah, they still are somewhere. But the point is, he was able to do what the people writing news stories were unable to do, and that's get the story right. And I believe we described that as a really good hack back then, and it's something that we appreciate to this day. So here's a little bit of an excerpt from Aaron's talk back in 2002. Again, that phone number, 212-209-2950. $50 gets you the entire collection of all of our Hope keynotes, plus a few other talks. $75 gets you all of that in thumb drive form. So it's either DVD or thumb drives. 212-209-2950.
I mean, what's scary to me is we at this point are at a loss for what to do. We don't know what to do about our politicians. You know, we don't know what to do about foreign policy. First of all, there's a few things that you should think about. One, I mean, I remember after September 11th, all these people were like, let's go get them. Let's go fight them. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. Oh, yeah, like it's up to you. Shut up. All these people in coffee shops. I hate that. I hate people talking about foreign policy in coffee. You know what? Why? You have no say? Shut up. First of all, you don't know anything. That's what Americans, I just wish, see, I'm the guy to say, you know what? I don't know anything. I'm standing in front of a room of people. You all know a lot more than I do about a lot of stuff that's actually practical, has practical uses in the world. God bless you for it. Me, I know nothing. But at least I admit to that. I tell jokes. I have a halfway clever sense of humor if you catch me on the right day. That's it. You know what? Most Americans are just like me. They don't know anything. So shut up. You are an idiot who has been raised by advertising since you were 2.5 years old. You don't know anything. Americans, they watch like the O'Reilly Factor and feel educated. And talk about things as though they knew. Like, you know what the problem is with Cuba? No, and you don't either. Because you've never been there and neither have I. Cuba could be like Nirvana for all I know. You don't know about Cuba. You don't know about Iraq. So that really angers me. I was having a discussion about September 11th. I can't believe we need to go kill them. Why? They took out our buildings. Ours? I didn't own any of those buildings. Well, they killed a bunch of our people. Well, you know, we killed 500,000 Iraqis. No, we didn't. Yes, we did. How many people you think died over there while we was dropping all them bombs day in and day out? Not as many as we got killed. Yeah, that doesn't count even like the million or so that have died after because of the sanctions and all that. You know, it's Americans. Look, the world is ignorant. Look, you know, people in oppressed dictatorships, communist countries, whatever. You know what? They don't know what's going on in the world because their media is controlled. And you know what? Neither do we. Our media is controlled. But you know what? If you go to Iraq and ask somebody, and I haven't done it, but I figure, if you go to Iraq and ask somebody and say, what's going on in the world? They probably say, I don't know. Saddam doesn't let us watch anything. But the difference over here, we think we know. We have the illusion of wisdom. We swear we know about what's going on in the world, and we don't. So, just like we swear we live in a democratic society, so we say these things to each other like, yeah, we need to go over there and do that. I'm going to write my congressman. Nobody cares. You have no say. You're not important. Who'd you vote for? Gore. No, I mean, no. Hey, nothing. That's the thing. But if you voted for Gore, you know what? You should just leave. Like, at least I voted for Nader. He didn't have a chance.
And that was Aaron Magruder speaking at our 2002 conference, H2K2, giving the keynote address, one of many talks that you will get for a pledge to 212-209-2950. You'll get all the keynotes for a pledge of $50. You'll on DVD format, you'll get all of them on a flash drive for $75, 212-209-2950. That was quite a talk. It was controversial, to say the least. It angered some people. Including some other speakers as well. But that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of giving talks and having a free exchange of ideas. It makes you think, because even if you disagree with some of the things that Aaron was saying, he got to a point where, yeah, you know what? What he's saying rings true, particularly us believing we know things, and we really don't know things. We really aren't experts on the rest of the world, and we're told a lot of things. The media spoon-feeds us garbage. The government controls the media. We're starting to wake up to that a lot more. Back then, it was a little bit more difficult to get that out, but it was a real honor to have him at our conference giving this talk, controversial as it was. In fact, we embraced the controversy. Again, just one of many talks that we are offering here tonight.
So look, if you pledge $50 for the Hope Archives DVD collection, pledge $75 for the Hope Archives thumb drive, 212-209-2950, you're going to get this in the mail, you're going to get these videos, and you're going to watch them, right? And there's going to be someone on that who says something you disagree with.
Yes.
Probably every single keynote will say at least one thing you disagree with.
They better.
But you're going to get perspectives from some of the smartest people in the world on these crucial issues, and you would be a fool to not at least consider their viewpoints. And you can do that if you pledge and you receive these premiums. You'll get them all in one package, all in one place. You can watch them. You can just binge watch them, stay up all night. Probably, you know, you'll need a lot of caffeine or something to watch them all at once. Or you can watch one a week for, you know, half a year. You got lots of options. 212-209-2950.
Well, we're not saying you're a fool if you don't get the package. I think we're saying you're a fool if you just dismiss different viewpoints out of hand, or label an entire community of people or an entire conference or anybody just based on one perspective that's presented.
Exactly. You know, I'm sure there are things that I will strongly disagree with that are on this set, but there are also things that I strongly agree with. There are things that I'm, you know, on the fence about, but each one of those things, whether I agreed with it or not, was something interesting. It was something that made me think. It was something that got a discussion going. And that's something that I love about Hope. It's something that I love about this station, because I listen to WBAI a lot. I'll turn it on sometimes, and there will be something that that I don't agree with at all. But it will still be something that makes me think. It will still be something that I appreciate has a chance to have this forum to do their thing on the air, because that wouldn't happen at other stations. 212-209-2950 or give to WBAI.org to help this keep happening.
And some of these are a little ahead of their time. I mean, it would have been hard, I think, to hear what Benny was saying. It was hard. I remember it. And relate it, not having the hindsight, the perspective that you have now, years and years later. I remember at the time it was surreal. It was like these huge, massive numbers.
Yes.
In terms of data sizes, amounts of files.
It was unbelievable.
It was really, but there, and where he was coming from was not, you know, there was not some massive media institution behind him. This was an individual who had worked in the industry at a time when whistleblowing itself was under a lot of scrutiny. We were basically on a bit of a high, I think, as a country coming off the elections. But in fact, what was occurring with drones and with surveillance and whistleblowing, it was just emerging then. And so a lot of this would have been a little bit odd coming down the path. But now, I mean, looking back, it was so dead on. And I would say the same thing with some of the critiques that Jello and like Aaron have had of media. And some of that stuff we're still looking at now.
It's hard to actually listen to these talks and say, oh, that's obviously from that period of time. Because you're talking about Binney, who gave a talk in 2012, and we just heard Aaron Magruder giving a talk in 2002, 10 years earlier. And they're both keyed in to the hypocrisies and the injustices that are happening around us, things that affect us very significantly, and things that the mass media was completely ignoring or just totally missing. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty, because that clued in attitude exists in all the conferences that we've had, exists with all of our keynote speakers. Brock Meeks was our keynote speaker for Beyond Hope in 1997, the only conference that did not take place at the Hotel Pennsylvania. He was working with MSNBC then, and he's gone on to do all kinds of incredible things since. But he also gave a great talk. Just so many amazing pieces that you'll get as part of this package when you call 212-209-2950. And Rob, you pointed this out to me during the break. Aaron Magruder's Wikipedia page.
Ah, yes. If you look Aaron Magruder up on Wikipedia, as of this broadcast, the photo of him used there is a photo I took of him at Hope in 2002, which is kind of happy in one way, but in another way, come on, Wikimedians, it's been 13 years. You can find a better picture of
him. You took this picture?
I did.
And it's been up since whenever his page came up?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. I saw that he was at the Hope Conference in 2002, that's his picture, but I didn't know you took the picture. That's really kind of weird. But yeah, and Aaron has continued to do all kinds of amazing things post-Boondocks. Black Jesus, incredible program that he's involved in, and hope to see many, many more creative things from him and from all of our speakers at the various conferences, not just the keynotes. We have average of about 150 speakers per conference, and some of them are really amazing people.
And with Aaron in particular, he was talking a bit about, at the time, he was just doing Boondocks as a comic strip, and it had something of a cult following, but he talked about how he wanted to build it up into a TV thing, and of course, years later, it became a TV thing and was very successful. So successful, in fact, that network took it away from him and tried to do it without him. It didn't work as well, but...
No.
But
about the animated Boondocks.
Yes, the animated Boondocks.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's gone and been so many good places and done really interesting work since then, and it's great to see him back then still as interesting, still doing neat things, and still coming at it from a direction that's very much of a hacker perspective.
And what I find really amazing, too, is people like this, people that we respect so much, whether it's Edward Snowden or William Binney, Aaron Magruder, Jello Biafra, or Steve Wozniak, et cetera, they are all amazed by our community. They are impressed and blown away by what hackers are doing. And to me, there's no better honor than that, to be able to see that kind of appreciation coming from people that you really hold in high regard. We are going to run out of time if we're not careful, so I want to make sure we have enough time to play this last excerpt. And that's from our most recent conference in 2014, Hope X, the 10th Hope Conference. You don't have to look too far to know who we had as our keynote speaker then. Actually, we had a couple of people for our keynote speaker. They gave kind of a combined talk, a conversation. We basically made history. I don't know how we're going to top it. But Daniel Ellsberg and Edward Snowden gave a joint talk, a conversation, as we've been saying, last July. A year ago, July. And this was shortly after Edward Snowden came upon the scene. And just the most recent chapter in incredible talks. You can get all these talks. You can get all the keynotes plus a few others in DVD format by calling 212-209-2950. and asking for the DVD set for $50 or the flash drive set for $75. 212-209-2950 or go to givetowbai.org and look it up. Type hope into the search bar there, and I think it comes up on the third page. Or maybe it'll show up easier if time goes by.
If you type hope archives, then it will be on the page.
All right. Let's go back and listen to something from July of 2014. Again, 212-209-2950.
Hardly anybody was willing to extrapolate and say, well, Ellsberg has shown that four previous presidents lied in the same way, escalated in the same way, made the same kind of secret threats, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson. But it ended with those. It ended before Nixon. So I thought maybe they'll figure out that maybe the current president is doing the same. No, it took documents, and I didn't have that. So for years I've been saying to people, it's got to be with documents, even though that increases the risk. Well, people know that basically, but they weren't willing to take the risk, I'm sorry to say, and couldn't do it anonymously. So then Manning came out with his millions, hundreds of thousands, actually, of cables. And then you, with documents. And it's like Mordecai Vanunu in Israel, with photographs, that Israel had a nuclear program and even an H-bomb that they weren't willing to admit. And it took those documents, which took the risk. So what I was saying is, I saw right away, without having met you, without having met Manning, that this is someone who I identify with. And at the same time, new heroes. He said, what was my feeling when I heard Snowden's name? I said, well, I have a new hero now. And so, thank you.
Thank you. If I could actually follow up on that, I think there's a really important point there that hasn't been real well addressed in the media. And that was, you said you acted, you know, not to reveal a specific illegality, but to end a war, to basically correct failures of policies that were costing lives, that were costing us the future of our country at a critical moment where things could be changed, where we could step back sort of from the brink and enjoy a better society. And I think people need to remember that these stories that are being published by journalists, the journalists are working together with their editors, with their institutions, to really analyze whether these things are in the public interest, whether they will benefit us as a society to know, and not publish things that are just, gossip or they don't have a significant justification for going into the public domain. Since these stories were revealed, we not only learned sort of the new truth of our world about the fact that all of our communications are being intercepted, collected, analyzed, and stored automatically. And that means that all of our ideas, all of our thoughts, all of our expressions, all of our associations, who we talk to, who we meet, who we love, who we hate, all of these things are now subordinated to the officials, to the policies of a few guys behind closed doors. And we don't know. We can't hold them to account. They don't answer to us. They don't even answer to the full body of Congress. There are only 8 members in Congress. They're called the Gang of 8, who get fully briefed on these intelligence programs. And interestingly, the intelligence community, the intelligence committees that are supposed to oversee these programs, these guys who have access to classified information, they receive more money from actually all of them. Every single member of this committee receives money from the top 20 intelligence companies in the United States. And they also receive more money from these companies than any other members in Congress. In fact, a single one of these congressmen, his name is Dutch Ruppersberger, received over $350,000 from these companies alone. That's not all of his donations. That's just from these top 20 companies. So when we think about the revelations, when we think about the fact that we've learned what's going on, when we have an ability to debate it, when we have the ability to correct this overreach, when we have the ability to protest unconstitutional activities that never should have begun, but we also have a broader civic understanding of how our government works. We see that the most senior officials in government have been lying under oath. They've been making false statements to Congress, for example, James Clapper. But not just Congress. It's not just the lies we know of. There are other ones that didn't get as much attention. For example, the Department of Justice, the Solicitor General of the United States, he lied to the Supreme Court twice in writing, and it was in the New York Times. But, you know, this didn't become the front page news that, you know, persists and we respond to. But it was a direct revelation that came out on the newspaper on June 7th, was when we found out that people had been surveilled. To dial back, because it gets technical in terms of surveillance stories, what happened is the government was using warrantless surveillance to collect evidence to justify warrant applications for warranted surveillance. That's a violation of both the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment for people who are keeping score. And what's interesting is they didn't report this to the courts and they didn't report this to defendants. But then they later told the Supreme Court that they were, and it turned out that was untrue. If we don't know these kind of things, we don't know our government. We have to be able to know not just what governments do, but how they act in order to decide how closely we need to scrutinize their behaviors. And if we didn't have whistleblowers like you, like Tom Drake, and like everybody else who's come forward at tremendous risks, we would have a less open, less free, and less accountable society. And because of that, I think it's worth taking risks to do this. It's not just what's illegal. You know, the scandal is what is legal. The scandal is what's happening every day, the unconstitutional activities that are still occurring right now. The fact that we look at, for example, one of the things that's been talked about a lot is how to fix this. The fact that the least controversial program in terms of do we end it, does this do nothing, is Section 7. And Section 215 of the Patriot Act basically says that, hey, we can collect the call records, metadata records from everybody in the country, regardless of whether they are suspected of any crime, any wrongdoing. And we have to ask, you know, what does that do? Why are they doing this? What is the value? Because if you encrypt communications, right, they don't get anything out of that. This is just the signaling records. This is like what a private eye collects. Who you meet, who you talk to, when it happened, where it was at, not the exact content of what was said during these calls. So encryption protects the content, but we forget about associations. And that's what this is about. These programs like Section 215, mass surveillance in general, is not about surveilling you. It's not about surveilling me. It's about surveilling us collectively. It's about watching the company for everybody in the country and on a global scale. This is basically a big data program which provides the raw data that can then be analyzed, it can be filtered, it can be subjected to rules, for example, like we see in the kids score, that says everything you do is being analyzed, it's being weighted, it's being measured, and that's without regard to whether or not you've done anything wrong. So when people say, you know, why does this matter? Well, why do I care? You know, why should I get up off the couch? It's because, again, when we think about this in terms of the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, you know, it's an unreasonable seizure because there's nothing to justify doing it. It happens in advance of any criminal suspicion. Or the due process violations under the Fifth Amendment, where the government is basically saying, we're going to use warrantless surveillance to collect evidence to then secretly use to get a warrant application. Or the First Amendment violations, of our freedom to associate, right? Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press, freedom of speech, or our right to associate, to enjoy the company of whoever we want. If you let go of your rights for a moment, you've lost them for a lifetime. And that's why this matters, is because it happened and we didn't know about it. We weren't told about it. In the post-September 11th period, we had programs set up like Stellarwind. They collected all of our internet metadata, all of our calling metadata, and it was creating a massive, deep, robust data set that allows us to look at connections and actually programmatically analyze the connections of everybody at every place all the time. And I think that's not what this country is about. I think that's a fundamentally un-American thing. And I think we, the people, you, the people, you in this room right now, have both the means and the capability to help build a better future by encoding our rights into the programs and protocols upon which we rely every day. And that's what a lot of my future work is going to be involved in, and I hope that you will join me and the Freedom of the Press and every other organization in making that a reality. Good.
Yeah. So I should mention both Dan Ellsberg and now Ed Snowden are on Freedom of the Press Foundation's board of directors, and we really want to make it our goal to help journalists and sources and everyone connect in a way that can be protected from the government's eyes when and essentially protect our right to privacy and freedom of speech. And so I think that brings me to my next question for Ed, and this comes from one of the Ask Snowden questions on Twitter, is what specifically can designers and developers and others working in technology start to do to make things better? And are there specific examples out there that you would like to see people follow?
So when I talk about this, it's always difficult because it's entirely dependent on the threat model of the individual who's operating. Gam-Gam in the home has a different set of priorities than somebody who's working to report on the malfeasance of a deeply irresponsible government in an authoritarian regime. And so generally when I talk about this, I say encryption. I say encryption, 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 because it's an important first step that denies the government access to anything more typically than suspicion, which is drawn from association. But when we talk about how we fix this stuff for the future, we've got to realize that association is often the problem. It doesn't end at encryption. It starts at encryption. Because if you don't think about the links, sort of the signals that are happening, when I email you, and the government can't read the content of the communication, but they go, you know, why is an employee of the government who was at work on Thursday at the Central Intelligence Agency or the National Security Agency or the FBI, who works on programs which would be deeply embarrassing to the government, why are they contacting someone at the Freedom of the Press Foundation or the Washington Post or the New York Times? And so we get tools like SecureDrop, which are good because they allow us to use mixed routing networks like Tor to sort of obfuscate our direct network path. But we've got to think about the fact that today if people are connecting through a phone, that's not super helpful because the phone, for example, sees that you're connecting to Tor. It sees you're a Tor user. A good example of this, really a bad example in terms of OPSEC, is this recent American spy who was discovered in Germany. He was apparently, allegedly in the newspapers, spying for the United States against Germany. He then, I guess, wasn't satisfied with what was going on. So he said, hey, I'm going to shop myself to what I think are the Russians, because he got an email. He was using Gmail, by the way. Great, great OPSEC there. And he got an email that purported to be the Russian embassy. And they said, hey, you want to sell some documents? He said, oh, yeah, sure, sure. And he sent them three classified documents. Now, this is an email. I don't know whether it's encrypted or non-encrypted. That hasn't really been covered in detail. But the key is the adversary that was on the distant end of the communication, in this case, German counterintelligence for his model, although he's actually allegedly a spy. He's not interested in public interest. He's interested in money. Is the fact that when he did this, he was the only one who had access to these documents who was out of the office at the time. He took the day off to send this email. So again, you know, we're not talking about the most sophisticated guy in the world, but this is the kind of thing you have to worry about in terms of how do governments discover their adversaries. And the same techniques they use to discover spies, they use to discover journalists. You know, the Risen case and the Rosen case, both of these are journalists in the United States where, for example, the government was trying to get James Risen, the New York Times reporter, to reveal his source, or they were subpoenaing an AP reporter, I believe, all of the phones in their office to say who from the government called the Associated Press. These are associational records. They didn't get the content of the calls, but they were trying to figure out what was going on. When we think about how we fix these programmatically, when we think about these in terms of protocols, We need to have protocols that are resistant to traffic analysis. They need to be padded, basically, even if there's some level of performance penalty. So you can't look at differences in, for example, Skype conversations and tell which phoneme or word was spoken based on packet size, the signaling speed, so on and so forth. You also need to use some sort of mixed routing, some sort of shared infrastructure that divorces the individual connection from the individual origination point. And that's still a hard problem. We haven't solved that in sort of a performance-respecting manner. Tor does a really good job, but Tor is also TCP-only. It doesn't handle UDP and a lot of other things like that. But this is something that's better to really get down and have everybody get in together, sort of red team it. Somebody pitches an idea, and the other people in the community, whether that's Twitter, whether that's a mailing list, they tear it down. It's the peer review model. That's how we do these things and we fix it. We need people to attack these systems. We need people to work as adversaries to try to find holes so we can fix them. And there's also the user experience issue. For example, GPG is robust and pretty reliable encryption. Unfortunately, it's damn near unusable. I mean, it's fine if you're comfortable with command line. It's fine if you're good with key management. But again, gam-gam at the home is never going to be able to do that sort of thing. We need encryption, mixed routing. We need non-attributable communications or unattributable internet access, UIA, for example, that's available to people, that's easy, that's transparent, and that's reliable, that we can use not just here in the United States but around the world, because, again, this is a global problem. The National Security Agency, the FBI, these guys led the way because we've got the biggest budgets and we're the most aggressive when it comes to that kind of thing. But we're only the first. We're not the last. This is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And we have to, you know, the grad students of the world have to be thinking about what they can do to fix this. They need to think in adversarial terms. They need to think about how are the worst people on earth going to try to subvert and break your system to not just damage individuals, but to damage governments, to shield themselves from oversight and accountability. And what can you do? What do you know? What can you think up to help shield us from that? And the techniques are only limited by our imagination.
Okay. I hope people are taking notes here or in the darkness or texting or the suggestion. He's giving you your marching orders. Okay.
They know this stuff.
All right. That was an excerpt from Edward Snowden at HopeX a year ago, July, giving the keynote address. Wow, what a talk that was. What an event that was. And I could just listen to that forever. And I wish we could play the whole thing here. But, you know, you can get the whole thing along with every other keynote address that we have had at every HOPE conference since 1994 and a bunch of other talks as well by calling 212-209-2950 and pledging either $50 for the DVD set or $75 for the flash drive. And, again, we were having trouble before with the premiums, but they are all in stock now. Please give us a call in the last couple of minutes of this extended program. We are not going to be on next week. We'll be on in 2 weeks. We'd like to see a last-minute burst. 212-209-2950.
We want to give a special thanks to the people who did call back after the problem was fixed and pledge, and we have a few of those, and some people who probably just tried for the first time after later in the show, but there's still a few minutes left. 212-209-2950. You pledge for the Hope Archives DVD collection. That's $50. The Hope Archives thumb drive, which is $75 and includes all the DVDs plus some extra special talks. And really, there's nothing like this collection of material anywhere. To have it all in one place, there will be stuff you learn from this. There will be stuff you hate, but I think it'll be worth it.
All right, we are out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in and thank those of you who have your finger on push buttons or dials or whatever and are calling 212-209-2950 to keep Off the Hook on the air here on WBAI New York. It's 9 o'clock. Something else will be coming up right after this, and you can write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Good night.